ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैवं नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नास्ताप्रयेषु फभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीर्तमश्लोकेर् भक्तिर्भावती नैस्तिकीर्। So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, The Creative Impetus, by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Chapter 6, The Activities of Lord Rishabhdev, text number 11. Usually we do the word for word, but I think I'll just skip that. What I understand, the whole idea of this repeating the verse is that we try to memorize it, but since this is prose, it's very difficult to memorize. So usually we just skip it. So I'll just read it myself. Techahi arvakanaya nitya loka yatrayanda parampara yasvastas tamasi ande svayam eva prapittisyanti. Please repeat. Those people not following the Vedic principles. Cha. And. He. Certainly. Arvaktanaya. Deviating from the eternal principles of Vedic religion. Nityaloka yatraya. By practice arrived at, by their own mental concoction, anda paramparaya, by a disciplic succession of blind ignorant people, asvastaha, being encouraged, tamasi, into the darkness of ignorance, ande, blindness, svayam eva, themselves, prapatishanti, will fall down. Translation: low-class people, due to their gross ignorance, introduce a system of religion that deviates from the Vedic principles. Following their own mental concoctions, they automatically fall down into the darkest regions of existence. Purport. In this connection, one may see Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, where there is a description of the downfall of the Asuras, 1616 and 1623. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gananjana Salakya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistang Stapitang Yena Bhutale Svayang Rupa Kadhama Yang Dadhati Svapadantikang Vandehang Sri Guru Sri Yutha Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagna Raghunatang Vitang Tang Sajivang Sadvaitang Savadutang Parijana Saitang Krishna Chaitanya Devang Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sagna Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitangscha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Rishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpa Taruvyascha Kripa Sindhuvya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So is Lord Rishabhdev speaking here to his sons. Yesterday we had a very nice class of Mother Jayabhadra. And as he was saying that, Prabhupada doesn't hold back in these verses, and neither does Lord Rishabhdev, so it's in line. I'll just repeat the verse. Low-class people, due to their gross ignorance, introduce a system of religion that deviates from the Vedic principles. So this was described in previous verses, that Lord Rishabhdev, he was lying like a python, and he basically wouldn't move. Whatever people would give him, that is what he would eat. And he wouldn't even take time out to pass stool. He would just pass stool right there on the spot. Of course, it was explained that the stool was smelling very fragrant. And it had a very nice smell all around. So Prabhupada explained, well, first of all, it is said that the Jain are coming from this, that there was this king, and he started imitating this behavior of Lord Rishabhdev, and then from that the Jains sprouted. And Prabhupada explains then also there from the hippies came. And of course the hippies were most famous in the 70s and the 60s. But in one sense, they're still there. Maybe you won't call them hippies anymore, but they're still there. Young people, they wear like matted hairs or so-called dreadlocks. And sometimes they live on farms. And they also have this tendency to not make extensive arrangements for washing. Or, they have this impersonalistic philosophy that we're all one and we're all God, and it culminates ultimately in that we should all enjoy and be nice to each other. And this is, of course, against religious principles. I will admit that I myself also used to be a little bit like that. Mother Jayabhadra explained that Brahmananda, he was asking Prabhupada, why are you always talking about Mayavadis, and now he's talking against hippies. And this was because most of us, we have that tendency. I was, of course, most of you know, I work for Vanipedia, more exactly Vani Quotes, and I was looking up this word impersonalism, and it's not even so well known, I find. I just want to take a little time to explain it a little bit, as far as my understanding goes. One aspect of impersonalism is that we act impersonal, mainly towards each other. This is like an extended kind of effect of impersonalism, because it sprouts from thinking that that we are God. And Mother Jayabhadra explained that even if we are a little bit proud or something, that is that same tendency. And that results in that we think that we are the center of enjoyment, and everybody else should assist us in our enjoyment. And this is, of course, exactly what we're doing in Krishna consciousness. We're all trying to assist Lord Krishna in his enjoyment. And if we do that, everything becomes very, very nice. Here in Radha, we have Shishi Radha Gopinath. And no matter how much we worship him or how much we glorify him, Prabhupada would say it's still not enough. And Gopinath, he can accept any kind of worship. But for us, sometimes it becomes a little bit embarrassing, because it's sometimes not completely appropriate. But with Gopinath and Radharani, we can never glorify them enough. So if we have this tendency that we want to be glorified, then automatically we will become proud, or that we think we are God. And like I said, if you think you're God, then indirectly you want to be glorified. And this breeds a kind of pride, And then automatically it will be a little bit difficult for you to associate with other people, because generally most of us are proud. I mean, this is the, of course, we're trying to become devotees, so devotees generally are not proud, but in the material world everybody is proud. Prabhupada says, you know, in the material world everybody is sinful. As soon as you have a material body, it means sinful. This is a prison house. So if we are a little bit proud, then automatically other people will become disturbed, because they also have that tendency. And even devotees, they try to become humble, and they immediately feel if somebody is falsely proud, and then there is disturbance. So therefore Prabhupada says that from all the Mahajans, the best example is Prahlad Maharaj, because I personally cannot think of anybody more humble than Sri Prahlad Maharaj. So that we should always keep in mind when we associate with the devotees. Of course, we shouldn't think that this devotee is Hiranyakashipu. But we should definitely try to be in the mood of Prahlad Maharaj and try to tolerate and be very, very humble. And I sometimes said that you don't have to be humble, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, if you want to keep chanting Hare Krishna, then you must become humble. You must become humble, you must become tolerant, you must be ready to offer all respects to others, and you must be free from false prestige. So that we discussed also yesterday in Bhagavad Gita, that the soul is very, very small. You take the hair, and then from the tip of the hair you divide it in 100 parts, and that part you divide again in 100. And that part is, according to the Upanishads, that's the measure of the soul. That's who we really are. That soul, spirit soul, is sitting inside the heart. We're also discussing that in Bhagavad Gita, that it's sort of floating in the life airs. Like you have the downward air, and you have the upward air, you have the expanding air, you have the air for equilibrium. So there's different airs, and the soul is kind of floating in that. And Prabhupada explained the purport, if you purify those airs, then the soul will become free. It become Krishna conscious. So the soul is very, very minute. That's who we really are. This body is simply a machine. So we should always try to remember that we are tiny, 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 tiny. And therefore, we shouldn't be puffed up with false prestige. And even, you know, now I'm speaking to you in English, all these things have been taught to me. So if you meet humble persons, they always say, this is the mercy of God, or the mercy of Krishna, or the mercy of my teachers. They always give the mercy to others, the honors to others. Like the Christians, they also have this saying that it's all God's mercy, and the devotees also say it if they're humble, or at least when they have some understanding of the philosophy, they say it's all Krishna's mercy, Prabhu. Or like the Christians, they also say that you have your God-given talents, and you should use them in God's service. And this is what I understand what Rupa Goswami describes as utsahan, that you have to be enthusiastic to serve Lord Krishna, and you have to do it as good as possible. Like I had one friend, he said that if you're not engaged 100%, and that means that preferably your body, your mind, and your intelligence is engaged. So it should be, ideally, it should be something according to your, they would say dharma, according to your varna and to your ashram, according to who you really are. Prabhupada would ask them, his disciples, what would you like to do for Krishna? And this is, in one sense, you could say this is like, sometimes Prabhupada was asked about varna ashram dharma. And in one sense, this is varna ashram dharma. You just ask people, what would you like to do for Krishna? And then the person who asks, ideally speaking, he should be a brahmana. So that is the main thing about varna ashram. We need brahmanas, and that is, as far as my understanding goes, the main thing about ISKCON, that we trying to train up brahmanas, or as Prabhupada used to say, first class men. And once we have first class men, then they can facilitate all the people in engaging them according to their nature. And this is really all it takes. And then on top of that, we have to cultivate these farming projects. That also sometimes there's many discussions, but my understanding goes that if you read Krishna book, then everything is explained there. That is my understanding, that we're just trying to live like Krishna used to live. Sometimes the body says it's not possible, but I'm convinced it is possible. And this is the real self-sufficient farming, is to just live like Krishna. And like I already talked a little bit about the hippies, and Prabhupada just said they are our best customers. And there's many hippies, or so-called hippies, or whatever you want to call them, or whatever they call themselves, that are into this farming, but they miss one important thing. I mean, they miss many things, but the main thing they miss is cow protection. Generally, these farms don't have any cows. So if we can just have a few farms with cows and genuine self-sufficiency, then I'm sure that we will become a shining example for all these so-called hippie farms, you know, and they will come to us for advice. So it's a kind of preaching that's a little bit undeveloped, but I think we're definitely, many devotees there thinking about it, and we're going the right way. Okay, so now I deviated a little bit. I think what I remember, what I was talking, is about the soul being very, very small, and that we shouldn't be puffed up with false prestige. And that is if we want to keep chanting Hare Krishna. Trinada Pisanichana Kirtaniya Sadahari. So I'll read a little bit from the 16th chapter. I admit I don't know it so well. I've been studying Bhagavad Gita quite intensively. But when we studied this chapter, I was not sure where I was. I think I was in England. So I haven't studied it so much. I think maybe that goes for other people as well. It's called The Divine and Demoniac Natures. So Lord Rishabhdev is describing here low-class people. As Mother Jabhadra was saying, we should be, I think that what she was saying, I'm not sure, at least that's what I got from the class, that's what I got when I walked away, is that we shouldn't, like with impersonalists, we should be careful not to think that I am not an impersonalist. Of course, we don't want to become impersonalist, but we should be mindful that we are infected by these philosophies, by these tendencies to treat other people impersonal. And similarly, especially when I talk about myself, I at least I used to be, and still to a great extent am, low class. And so that we should also be very mindful of. Even if it's only to stay humble. You know, the devotee, as far as I understand, he always finds an excuse to be humble. Like sometimes you have these kind of mock fights that the devotee says, no, you're senior. And the other devotee says, no, you're senior. And they always have some argument why the other person is senior. So this is the Vedic culture. And this becomes very, very sweet. So, so Lord Rishabh talks about low-class people. And, I'm sitting here on the so-called hot seat. So, although I don't feel very qualified to preach to you, I feel that it's also kind of my duty, because that's what Lord Rishabhdev is doing. He's preaching to his sons, and he's preaching to us. It's kind of, I don't want to say unpalatable, but it's because the truth should be spoken in a palatable way. Now, I'm not so expert at that, so I will do my best. But it's kind of heavy what he's saying. And I'm trying to explain to you, I hope you will excuse me, that we also are influenced, you know, at least to some extent, maybe not all of us, but at least if I speak for myself, I am, by ignorance. Here is said gross ignorance. And because of that, Lord Rishabhdev says, therefore they introduce a system of religion that deviates from the Vedic principles. Maharaj was also speaking a few days ago that many of the, because there were GBC meetings in Mumbai, and Kanama Kamraj also told me this, that many of the leaders, they're thinking about you know, the cyclic succession, about succession. And I think yesterday was also pointed out by Tulsi Priya Devadasi that because we are, if I speak for myself, and most of us, we are grand disciples, it is in one sense a very responsible position. Because, I mean, you could say that, of course, Prabhupada's disciples are more important, and perhaps it is so. But at the same time, they had the association of Srila Prabhupada directly, and we didn't. And therefore, it is very important that we don't deviate from the Vedic principles, and therefore we should keep in mind that if we even have the tiniest speck of ignorance, then we probably will deviate, because that's what it said here, that due to their gross ignorance, they introduce a system of religion that deviates from the Vedic principles. So I'll read a little bit from Bhagavad Gita. Then I'll start with this, just to introduce it a little bit. The demoniac person thinks, we all know this this verse, what's the Sanskrit? Let me see if I can find it for you. No, it's not in here, but it's in the previous verse. Aham bogi, like that. Anyway, I'll just read it to you. So much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. This is how the demonic person thinks. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy, or she, and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I am the richest man, surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. So I will admit, I mean, I tell you honestly, not everybody has sit on this chair, but it's my experience, it works like a truth serum. As soon as you sit here, you start to, you almost, it's impossible for you to lie. And you start to reveal your mind to the devotees. So I will admit to you that, especially when I sometimes get angry, then I definitely feel like that. Of course, it's the mind, but when we get angry, at least in my case, then the mind kind of takes over, and we have this tendency, you know, to think like that. At least I'm a little bit passionate. Of course, it doesn't last long, but I'm just admitting to you that for me it sounds very familiar. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. Krishna continues, thus perplexed by various anxieties and bound by a network of illusions, they become too strongly attached to sense enjoyment and fall down into hell. Narake, patanti narake suchao, because they are suchao. This was also explained yesterday. Actually, I wanted to repeat that because it's very important, I feel. And it helped me a lot in my spiritual life. It says here, it's not in the Sanskrit, but Prabhupada, he puts it in the translation. He says, they will abandon bathing three times daily and worshipping the Lord. So sometimes there's a quote where it says that the brahmachari should bathe once, and the grihastha should bathe twice, and the sannyasi should bathe three times. And that verse, I think it's quoted once or twice. But many, many times, especially in letters, Prabhupada says, especially when he initiated people for the second time, so-called Brahman initiation, he said at least bathe two times a day, if you cannot, three times. Preferably three, but if you cannot, three, then two. And also, Hanumat Prasad Maharaj explained that if you can't wash anything, at least wash your mouth. He explained that there's all kinds of nerves and so many things in your mouth. So if you just wash your mouth, then already you are, I don't want to say halfway there, but you're a long way there. Here again, Prabhupada explains, not regularly bathing or washing their mouths regularly. Prabhupada explained that you should actually wash your hands after you go to the bathroom, to the toilet. Wash your hands with soap and wash your mouth. And it's my experience also that when you go into the toilet, there's all these odors. And when you wash your mouth with water, then it kind of neutralizes that. They will always remain unclean and they will pluck out their hair. Yeah, what that exactly means, I don't know. Maybe it has to do with... because this specifically talks about the change. So I don't want to speculate too much on it. But we do know that in Kali Yuga, many people, they pluck out their, you know, their eyebrows and so many hairs and this and that. I once heard that that's actually forbidden in the Quran. That's one of the reasons why they grow beards. Like we had a whole discussion about it yesterday. I think the idea is that generally, because I think it's also one of the reasons why we shave, because Kshatriyas used to have these mustaches, like I did this play with Parvida, and I was wearing this mustache. So, and that is it's a sign of beauty. And this is why the Muslims, they grow their beard. It's like, in one sense, it's an austerity. But we just shave everything, which is another kind of austerity. And like we discussed yesterday, we also have that in our culture, that during Chaturmash, some devotees, they don't shave for 4 months. But generally, Prabhupada didn't like that because we are preaching. And Prabhupada, although he said hippies are our best customers, he was always very careful that we should not be identified with the hippies as a movement. So therefore, he always made it a point that his disciples should be clean-shaven as a gentleman. So that was, I think that is, it's not, I don't want to say it's forbidden to wear a beard. But like I said, Prabhupada doesn't like it. And I think the main thing that we always have to keep in mind is that we should look like a gentleman or like a lady. So you should always be clean. And because you have some rich people, now it's a little bit in fashion, then they have a beard, but it's usually very groomed. And of course, and this is the whole point, we don't do that. You see, we don't keep a beard very nicely because it keeps us into the bodily concept. So therefore, better just to shave it off. Anyway, but this cleanliness is very, very important. I also read in Bhagavatam, I don't recall actually where, but that if you have, for instance, dirty feet, it is said that Kali can enter. And Chaitanya Maharaj also explained to me, or he didn't explain to me, he explained to his disciple, Dharmakshetra Prabhu, that now you're initiated as a Brahmin, you should always keep your nails very short, and your hair also. So the influence of material energy will not be very severe. And he specifically mentioned, as I recall it, ghosts, because there is so many dirt that can go under your nails and things like that. So again, the rule is not specifically to cut your nails, but to keep very clean. And because we're always working hard, it's difficult to keep your nails clean when you're working very, very hard. So, that's the idea. Like I had another devotee, he wanted to keep his long hair, and I had a little discussion with him, and he said, "Yeah, it gives me power." And as far as I understand, it's definitely true. We have the famous story in the Bible of Samson and Delilah. And then we have the famous story of Bhaktivinoda Thakur with the yogi that was harassing him and his family. And he said, just shave up his hair. And as soon as they shaved him up, he lost his power. I also know a personal story of, not personal, but what I saw on television of this football player. He also had long hair. And then he cut off his hair and then he stopped scoring goals. You know, he scored so many goals. And so definitely the hair gives you power. But we are not interested in so many shaktis or powers. We're interested in Krishna. And the devotee just surrenders to Krishna and he has the faith that Krishna will protect him. So yes, the hair will give you power, but we don't want that. We don't want so many external powers. In one sense, you could say it's another form of demigod worship. We just want to trust on Krishna that he will protect us. So... And when you have power in one sense you could call it also karma, because it's like a strength to do action. That means good and bad. So you have to take the good with the bad. Like for instance, the hair might give you power, but it also is generally a little bit dirty. So you have to be careful. And like I said, I don't know the exact English word, but it's one thing also to attract the opposite sex, to have long hair, beautiful long hair. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we had beautiful curling long hair, and then everybody was crying when he cut it off because it was so beautiful. I'm just trying to stress this cleanliness. Yeah, I will skip the purport. Usually I don't do that, but I just want to read these verses. I'll just read a few more. Just bear with me. Self-complacent and always impudent, deluded by wealth and false prestige, they sometimes proudly perform sacrifices in name only without following any rules or regulations. Now, I mean, when I read this, I'm immediately thinking, does this sound familiar? I mean, do we ever do this? Do we ever perform sacrifices in name only, that our mind is somewhere else? So again, we should be mindful that these verses, in some cases, maybe not to a great extent, but at least to some extent, describe us. Here it also says in the purport, and since they do not believe in authority, they are very impudent. So, so many times I had so many problems with ISKCON authorities. So this is not good, you see? This is not good. We should always try to respect the authority. Prabhupada says, should understand that these men or these women has come there by a spiritual process. And it's not your job to chastise that person or to, you know, even to, you know, give him advice. Well, advice can be given, but it has to be done in the proper mood. Like I explained last time, that if the authority asks something, the better is to just say yes, sir, instead of asking, you know, 10 million questions. Of course, if you really don't understand it, then you have to ask. But first, try to figure it out. Bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust, and anger, the demons become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in their own bodies and in the bodies of others, and blaspheme against the real religion. So that is God. He is sitting in our bodies and in the bodies of others. And the demons, they blaspheme against the real religion. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, are perpetually cast into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Text number 20. Attaining repeated birth amongst the species of demoniac life, O son of Kunti, such persons can never approach me. Gradually they sink down to the most abominable type of existence. One thing I forgot to mention. Let me just read text 21. There are three gates leading to this hell: lust, anger, and greed. Every sane man should give these up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. Yeah, lust, anger, and greed. Sometimes we had a discussion last time about a pure devotee. It's difficult to see a pure devotee. But as far as I understand, Prabhupada said, in one sense, it's very easy. You can just look by these three signs. Lust, anger, and greed. If a person is lusty, angry, or greedy, then he cannot be very, very advanced. Of course, if it's for Krishna, then it's different. But generally, these things are because we are being curbed in our sense gratification. We don't get enough sleep, or we don't get enough prasadam, or we don't get enough time to even wash ourselves, because also washing is a means to an end. Sometimes you just need to do something, so you shouldn't be too greedy. With that you can check, and of course we should always try to check ourselves, not others. The tendency is of course always there. And another thing I wanted to mention, because Krishna mentioned it a few verses ago, and I just wanted to quickly touch on it, that he says here, "Patanti narake ashusau." I commented on that unclean. I a little bit deviated on the point, but here, patanti narake, they glide into the hell. So I just want to stress, I mean, we will hear it soon enough, because we're now in the fifth canto, but that there are in fact hellish planets, and that it's our subtle body that will be, if we are sinful, I mean, we're all devotees, so you don't have to worry. But if you act very sinful, because being a devotee means that you act like a devotee, it's not just rubber stamping. Prabhupada, there's one letter or one lecture, I'm not sure, that Prabhupada says that The Yamaraj will not be lenient with the GBC. I mean, the higher your position, the more scope you have for making mistakes. So, and generally, I find personally that the devotees who are in higher position, my experience is the more humble they are. And I would say it is actually a qualification, especially in spiritual life, that you have to become more and more a servant. Like yesterday, a devotee was saying, if you want to become a parent, then first you should become a servant, then you should become a friend, and then only you have the adhikar and the relationship to chastise the child. So we have to be very, very careful in these things. Anyway, I just wanted to stress that there are in fact hellish planets, and that our subtle body can go there. And we really don't want to go there. I just wanted to stress that it's actually existent, but it's on a subtle plane, and you can't see it with your normal eyes, but it's there. Okay, let me just finish this. So there are three gates leading to hell: lust, anger, and greed. Text 22. The man who has escaped these three gates of hell, son of Kunti, performs acts conducive to self-realization and thus gradually attain the supreme destination. And 23, that's what Prabhupada refers to in the purport. He who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. And then I'll just read the last verse of the chapter. 24, one should therefore understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. Yeah, so the closing statement would be that we have to do that through parampara. So through our guru and through our authority and through our direct authority. And my experience is that it's always most difficult to accept our direct authority, but that is actually the real challenge. And that is the person who really knows us inside and out, and that is ultimately the person that we should, from whom we should ask how we should act and what is our duty and what is not our duty. Of course, we have to, guru, sadhu, shastra, we have to check it with what Srila Prabhupada says and with other sadhus. But the direct authority, that is ultimately, in my understanding, the key to liberation. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasadam. You get the mercy of guru, then you get the mercy of Krishna. So Chidam Arba explains, das, 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 and the das. So the guru will be very pleased, your guru. Most of us, they have an initiating spiritual master. Your spiritual master will be very, very pleased if your direct authority is very pleased. So that's how it works. So I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments? It was pretty straightforward lecture. Maybe a little bit heavy, I'm sorry. Okay. So thank you. You want to say something? Right. Yeah, we discussed it in Bhagavad Gita class, but I don't really know. But what Bhakti Vaskovinda was saying, that if you just perform devotional service, then these airs will automatically be purified. What Prabhupada used to say, we have it on the japa table, sit properly. So I think in one sense it goes automatically, but at the same time I think it will actually happen, so you can actually feel it. Prabhupada also used to say, when you smell the flowers that are offered to Krishna, automatically all the life airs will be balanced. So, and another thing also Prabhupada used to say, one of his disciples was complaining that he was still having this lust. I think it was mainly lust. I said, Prabhupada, that's because you're not regularly chanting. So it is also very important that you chant regularly this japa. And this will also, again, sometimes the karmis, they say like that, the devotees, they get in the ecstasy. Because if you chant mantras, then you breathe out more than you breathe in. And this is why you get some feeling in your head. Of course, that is not true. The mantra, in fact, is non-different from Krishna, and it can give you ecstasy. But there is some truth in it. There is some truth in it that also by the mantra, this will also purify your life airs. So, as far as I'm concerned, everything is included in Krishna consciousness. But it has to be gradually experienced. Yeah, because it culminates in sex. You see? Yeah. Yeah, they want to be nice, and then there's a campfire, and we all know what happens after the campfire. You see? So, and this is against religious principles. All religions, they have a marriage. Like, we invite them, but then we say, if they come, like they're a couple, we ask them to get married. That this is what Prabhupada did. So if they simply get married, just leave a few bad habits, then they're perfect. And I personally feel that there's many farms like that. If we push forward more this self-sufficient farming, like I said, like it's described in the Christian book, then they will become very inspired, I'm convinced. There's many of them, I think. Anyway, I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sisi Radha Gopinath ki jai, Nita Gopremanande, Hari Hari Bol.